Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our diverse seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. During the past 2 weeks, we have been considering communities. The organizations focused on welcoming newcomers, such as immigrants and refugees, and those formed spontaneously to meet an unexpected crisis. Our first story started around 1900 with the remarkable racially integrated coal town of Buxton and what happened to its inhabitants when it closed in 1925. I recently spoke with David Gradwall about the PBS special, You Can't Go Back to Buxton.
You can't go back to the physical town, but you can, and people do, go back to the town site, which is now on the National Register of Historic Places, pursuant to archaeology that Nancy Osborne Johnson and I oversaw, and that Dorothy and Elmer Schweder and Joe Raba did with interviewing former residents of the town. The Buxton, Iowa Club Incorporated is an interesting group which consists of people who lived at the town site and their descendants. Of course, now in 2022, there are few, if any, and right offhand, I can't think of any who are still alive, but their children and grandchildren are members of the Buxton, Iowa Club. It hasn't been too active in the last 2 years because of COVID, but it's still there, and they have meetings and lectures by different people, different aspects of it. And COVID notwithstanding, they have usually an annual trip to the Buxton town site, and it may include a picnic that they take along and eat at the site.
When did they have to leave Buxton?
Well, people left pretty much after the First World War. Certainly by 1920, there were very few people there. And by 1925, probably just less than a half a dozen families that stayed there as farmers around the area. They had to leave because the coal mines were moved to sites farther west. Haydock and Consol were some of the consequent towns. But those towns never consolidated to the degree that Buxton was, and they were much more short-lived. Buxton, when they built it, there were large, presumably permanent buildings. They planned that to stay around a while, but eventually they went from deep coal mining shafts to other means of coal mining. And by 1925, the coal industry had changed. Trains were shifting to other kinds of power.
You said in your book that these were quarter-acre lots, and that's big enough so you could have a pretty nice garden.
Yes, they did. This was another part of the sort of utopian view of the Buxton family when they set out the town. They wanted people to be happy and to be self-sufficient to a good degree. So in addition to nice 5 or 6 room houses that the company built and the residents could rent or lease, they could also have their privately built homes if they wished. The houses were on quarter-acre lots, which allowed a degree of self-sufficiency. They could have, and many did, a pig or two and a cow, perhaps, and chickens. or goats penned up on different parts of it, and also gardens. And Consolidation Coal Company even published a little magazine. It was certainly bigger than a pamphlet, and it suggested things that could be grown there, vegetables, and want to work there. And so they provided a lot of amenities. And none of the former residents that I talked to indicated anything about the owners being dictatorial in any sense, and certainly not in terms of what we've seen in our own era.
Well, I think what they meant was that Ben Buxton decided they should have it downtown, that they should, you know, be able to choose where they wanted to live. Really, it was
a he did all that. This yes. was a planned yes. urban community.
Yes.
And it was very progressive and ahead of its time in that way. When I first read about it, I was really impressed because the planned urban developments of our era seemed like it was something new, but they had these antecedents right here in Iowa.
Well, there's a quote that I think of every time I think of Buxton, and you mentioned it near the end of the book when you were at, your first meeting at a Buxton club.
I remember it very well. It just impressed me at the time. This was our first meeting of the academic scholars with the Buxton, Iowa Club. And so it was a meet and greet. We weren't taking notes or trying to be little scientists sitting there. We were just people talking about our goals. And this man, whose name I didn't write down and I can't remember, said we had our own doctors and lawyers and store owners and so forth in Buxton, and then we moved to Des Moines and stepped back 100 years. And that was and is, I think, a really powerful statement of how particularly blacks and to a lesser degree the white immigrants looked on Buxton as a utopian community and better than they were able to step out into immediately when the town folded.
And, of course, there were many churches. There were certainly both black and white churches. Maybe no integrated churches, but that's because people wanted to be with their friends.
That's right, and they weren't totally segregated either. And one reason they weren't is because there were blacks and whites that intermarried. And so one white resident was, a former resident, was interviewed and said he just loved to go to the church and listen to them singing. It was a primarily black church, and they were singing beautiful hymns and so forth. Well, what he didn't say in that interview is he was married to a black woman.
It certainly was ahead of its time.
Yes, in many ways.
Basically, you have described how the Buxton Club keeps that community alive.
Oh, I think so, very definitely. And especially for the younger generation, grandkids and great-grandkids who either didn't know or would have a very vague memory of their ancestor who actually lived in the town. I think it keeps that alive and is a really important historical link with the past.
Oh, I'm just curious whether any of these people have gotten interested in their genealogy beyond.
I think so, but I don't know specifically. That'd be an interesting thing to research. Of course, so many of us have gotten interested in genealogy, perhaps beyond what our parents or grandparents did. And it's easier to do now, of course, with all of this material online that you can get at.
But also, the very fact that the outings for the Buxton Club include grandchildren, and of course, perhaps the grandchildren go on to these outings after they don't have grandparents to visit anymore.
I think that's probably true. And many of the people, including Dorothy Collier, who was our main research associate, informant or whatever, she would take pictures, historic photographs along with them at the picnic and point out buildings and then point to the spot where those buildings either existed as ruins or weren't there at all now.
You once told me that you were invited to give a eulogy at someone's funeral.
Yes, actually it was Dorothy Collier, Dorothy Neal Collier. I was invited to give a eulogy at her funeral, and this was the first time I had spoken from the pulpit of a Black Baptist church, and I found it daunting, but I also think it is one of the most signal honors that I ever got, something I certainly never thought when we started out, but to be asked by the family to give a eulogy, I think, is quite an honor.
Well, thank you very much. I guess there's no one, no white person alive who has as sweet a connection to the Buxton Club.
Well, I don't know whether I'm the only one, but I'm certainly one of them. And I still think that was one of the most exciting and gratifying projects I've worked on in my 60 years more in archaeology.
Thank you very much.
In case you just tuned in, we have been talking with archaeologist David Gradwell about how the Buxton Club has kept not only the memory of the community of Buxton alive, but has maintained the connections of those who lived there through the generations. Our next story will be about a community that formed spontaneously when low-income residents of the Crestwood Apartments in Davenport were unexpectedly made homeless when the building was sold to make way for high-end lofts. Al Womble, who is from Davenport but now lives in West Des Moines, made KHOI part of his outreach to provide for the needs of the residents. We are bringing you that story from our archives as it was unfolding in August of 2021. Continuing the story about Central Iowa's response to the eviction of the tenants of Crestwood Apartments in Davenport, Al Womble is here to tell us about what happened to the clothing, household necessities, and school supplies that he collected right here at KHOI a couple of weeks ago. I'll turn this interview over to my co-host, Gina McAndrews, who really got involved in collecting supplies.
Thank you, Susan, and hello, Al. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. So where did all of our donations go, and how are everybody in Davenport?
It all wound up in the hands of folks in Davenport, Iowa. The school supplies were a huge hit. I mean, there was nothing left except maybe a couple, you know, markers and pens and some sheets of paper. You know, parents showed up with the lists that the schools give to the children, you know, so that they can be ready for the school year. And, you know, people were able to completely fill that list based on the supplies that you folks provided. And that was fantastic. You know, we also had a situation. The one moment that was kind of emotional, somebody had donated a fairly nice looking dress that we had hanging up. And there was a lady walking around who was collecting some of the different supplies. And we also had like hygiene supplies there, like soap and toothbrush and toothpaste. And toothbrushes and toothpaste, I'll say that went real quick. people really wanted those. But when this woman saw this dress, she asked me how much it was. And I said, no, ma'am, it's free. It's all free. And she just said, this is such a nice dress. And then just kind of started to cry a little bit. And then was able to get that dress and then got some more clothes for her kids and filled up a couple bags. So I just thought, you know, wow, somebody, you know, donated this dress. And that dress really made this woman's day. You know, the fact that it was no charge for it and she was able to get that plus clothing for her children, you know, was really quite special. We also collected funds, which we used to help folks with their moving expenses. We also had volunteers there, you know, that were going over to the Crestwood apartments and helping people move, you know, and our efforts helped people move, helped us get Ryder trucks so that we could pack folks up and take them wherever they needed to go. And, you know, it was overall a good event. But as I was going to this event, I was receiving calls and emails from Cedar Rapids and Waterloo and Sioux City that they're also wanting me to try and duplicate that event over there. And, you know, I had mentioned while I was there that, you know, it's fantastic that Iowa citizens are gathering and binding together in order to do something about this. But it's also very disheartening that our state government has been granted funds in order to help with these moves. And yet still to this point, only 6% of those funds have actually been used to assist these particular folks. And so it's individuals like, you know, your staff and your listeners there at KHOI and other individuals throughout the state who are gathering together in order to help these folks. But, you know, that day made quite a difference in the lives of a lot of these people, because when they showed up, they're like, well, how much does anything cost? I'm like, no, it's all free. You could just see the kind of wonderment on people's faces, like, oh my gosh, this is really all free. And then it was a fairly moving day.
Full disclosure, according to regulations, KHOI as a non-commercial station is not allowed to say the words free or at no cost. But that is an intent to prevent this from being used to promote events. This is a news report of something that happened in the past.
So you had quite a caravan that you started off. So from your trip to Ames, and then you had an event in Fort Dodge, and then there were some other drop-off spots, right?
Yep. So I went from Ames to Fort Dodge for a Black Leadership Conference there, where I also received a lot of different school supplies and stuff. And then we went to Iowa City, where we picked up more supplies. And it's a good thing I drive a great big Chevy Suburban, because, you know, I perhaps hadn't counted on quite the amount of generosity I would get from my fellow Iowans. But, you know, the staff and listeners of KHOI, you know, donated quite a bit of stuff. So I showed up and hauled that in, and then I got all the stuff in Fort Dodge and then in Iowa City. I'm like, my goodness, I couldn't have room for even one more slip of paper, pack of cards in here. But, you know, it all in the end wound up being very helpful and very useful. And, you know, the fact that we were able to help so many families that day, you know, makes everything just worth it and makes me so thankful for KHOI staff and listeners.
So how big a caravan did you have from Des Moines to Davenport?
So I left a day early in order to get down there and kind of coordinate with some of the folks, other folks who were there. And from Des Moines to Davenport, we had at least three vehicles that headed down that way, including State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad. And when we got there, I would say we had about maybe all at one time, possibly 20 volunteers. It was difficult to say how many volunteers we had, because people would be leaving to go help people move. Other people would be leaving to go and help, you know, let people know who had already been displaced from those apartments that, hey, we've got this event. We can come and get, you know, free items for your home. Mm-hmm. And any material that was left was donated to the Open Door crisis center in Davenport, and with some of the food that was left, that was taken to a place called, I think, the Icebox in Davenport, which is also a place that helps, you know, gather food for those individuals in need. So if anything wasn't given away that day, and we gave away a lot of stuff, it still went to centers that are going to be ultimately helping these folks. And, you know, I was just really very grateful for not only all the people who gave donations, but the volunteers. And, you know, we had a good turnout. So
in the end, did most everyone find places to live?
There are still some people that are struggling to find places to live. Most people have found somewhere to go, whether it be, you know, at the moment, you know, moving in with friends or family. But, you know, it's still difficult for some of these folks because there's three different problems. Number one, not everybody qualifies for the state assistance currently the way it is structured. Not everybody qualifies for that state assistance. The second thing is that the bureaucracy that is involved makes it slow to receive that state assistance. The other problem that you have is that some of the renters in Davenport are reluctant to rent to anybody from Crestwood Apartments. And then number three, some of them are asking not only for an application fee, your deposit, first month's rent, and in some cases, they're asking for first month's rent and last month's rent. Well, for any individual, that could wind up being, you know, a check you have to write of like $1,700. And there aren't too many people I know that can just immediately cough up $1,700 on the spot. And if you are somebody who can cough up $1,700 on the spot, you know, your donations would be appreciated. But, you know, I am fortunate enough that we were able to assist a lot of people in moving, getting a lot of people to new places to live, whether that be permanent or temporary. And I just can't be thankful enough for all of those people who donated and said that, you know, this is a priority.
Well, we sure appreciate all the work that you've done and that you've come back to keep us updated on how they've been able to get some items and get settled in new places. What's your next project you're going to work on?
Well, my next project is to reach out to some of those other communities where they've asked for similar services and see what the needs are. I'm also going to try to sometime in late October or November coordinate a winter clothing drive for different spots around the state because I know that there are folks out there, once again, who are struggling to just make it by from one paycheck to the next, let alone buy new winter jackets and clothing for themselves or their children. You know, all of us, well, a lot of us who have had kids realize they just don't stop growing. And the winter jacket you had last year might not fit your kid, you know, this year. So I want to make sure that we do that in the future.
Thank you so much, Al. We sure appreciate all your work, and I hope you'll come back and tell us about your next projects you have coming up. And thank you for all your work for the communities that I'm sure there's a lot of work behind the scenes that doesn't get spread and broadcast around radio stations and newspapers.
Well, I'm going to have a lot of wonderful Iowans help me.
How are you getting the word out where you need to?
Well, primarily, you know, when I find a need and someone says that there's something that needs to happen here, I try to partner with local organizations and local activists and have them help me spread the word. One of the things that I'm also big on is printing up flyers to distribute because some of these folks that, you know, need our help either don't have devices to get on the internet or don't have internet access themselves. So it's important to make sure that, you know, you're going the old fashion of setting out flyers in order to help these folks so they know when and where something is taking place.
Thank you so much. And thanks for coming back to tell us how it went. It's pretty exciting for our listeners who pitched in.
You guys made a difference in a lot of people's lives that day. Yeah. People were, you know, if you could have seen some of those folks' faces, like I said, you know, the most touching thing was to me that one, I know parents were so grateful to pack up on school supplies and get their kids ready for school. They were very grateful for that. But it so touched me when, you know, I told that woman, no, this dress is free. And she just was like, you know, this is a beautiful dress, and just kind of started to cry a bit. And I'm a big softie, so that nearly made me tear up too. So
thanks again for coming and telling us. That was Al Rampenbaumbo. This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa.
The events that Al Wombo was talking with Gina McAndrews about took place in August of 2021. He told us he'd come back and tell us how it went after that, and here he is.
After the event in Davenport, it really came down to funding and time that prevented us from continuing to do that. But anything that we had left over was distributed between different organizations that were actually in Davenport itself, as well as organizations in Fort Dodge and here in Des Moines itself. One of the things that we concentrated on was trying to have a letter or, you know, email writing campaign to our state legislators about this particular problem, you know, because we saw that this was not an isolated incident happening in Davenport, but it was happening all across the state. And the funds that were meant specifically to deal with this problem, you know, were not utilized specifically to address, individuals suddenly being evicted from their homes. Unfortunately, the state government led by Governor Kim Reynolds, you know, the Republican-dominated state legislature, those arguments fell on deaf ears. And it was very discouraging that we did not have the type of response from our state government that felt that, you know, there should be a sense of responsibility to these individuals who, through no fault of their own, you know, lost jobs unexpectedly and suddenly due to the COVID pandemic. And now we're financially strapped that, hey, we have not been able to earn money because of COVID. And now suddenly, you know, putting us in this financial situation is, you know, further straining us. So that was something that was definitely disheartening. And I think one thing that I would really like to see is that, you know, more organizations understand what types, or that more people would understand what organizations are out there that can help individuals and make a connection between those individuals in need of assistance and organizations that might be able to help them. And then also understand from those organizations, you know, what is the best way that you can help? What is the best way that you can offer assistance? Because the problem that we all ran into during this entire time, Susan, was that there were some people who weren't even aware that some of these different organizations existed. You know, they would know about, you know, major ones, you know, like the Red Cross or, you know, the Salvation Army. But there are a lot of different organizations throughout the entire state of Iowa that offer assistance to individuals who are facing, you know, whether it be financial crisis, food insecurity, you know, also facing things like, you know, traumatic experiences. And I think one of the best things that, you know, we can do is make sure that individuals who need that assistance are made aware of these organizations and how to connect with them. Thank you.
The next time we see each other, maybe years and years from now. Family reunion, got to have a family reunion. Family reunion, it's so nice to come together, get together. I wish Grandma could see the whole family. I sure miss her face and a warm
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Have you ever walked or met some people in Ames, black residents, and wondered what brought them to the Ames community and what's life like for them here? On the last day of Black History Month, we would like to spotlight some of the stories of black residents who currently live in Ames. Myself, I'm an 11-year resident of Story County, where I lived in Ames, and now I currently live in Cambridge.
Ron, where did you grow up?
I grew up on the south side of Chicago.
And when did you come to Central Iowa?
I arrived in Ames in January of 2003.
So did you come to Ames because of the Section 8 housing low-income project arranged by the city of Ames in Chicago?
No, it's a funny story of how I came here. My daughter's mother had a sister who was going to Iowa State, and I went on the internet and found out she had family here. So her and my first daughter, Kaylee, came here to visit, and we liked the community so much that we decided to move here.
And then eventually your wife returned to Chicago, right?
No, we stayed here. We've been here ever since.
Okay, and you live in... How long did you live in Ames?
I've lived in Ames until about 2011, and then we moved out to Cambridge.
Why did you move to Cambridge?
Cambridge is a nice community. Well, I had friends that lived there, and, you know, we liked it. And it's a great community to where everybody knows everybody. It's a close-knit community, and basically for my daughters who really love the school system, and they have tons and tons of friends out in Cambridge.
So you like Cambridge?
Oh, I love Cambridge. Cambridge is one of the best communities that I've lived in. It's small, but it's a nice place to live, though.
So now, is it right you're living in the renovated old schoolhouse in Cambridge?
Yes. It's the only big red building in Cambridge. I mean, it's a really great place to live, though. I mean, it's a three-bedroom apartment, and we really enjoy living there.
And you work in Ames, right?
Yes. I currently work at Okoboji Grill right now.
Okay, so you, in a way, are an interesting person to be hosting this show today.
Yes, I am, because like I say, I've done a lot around KHOI. But you know what, Ursula, in preparation for this show, I did an interview with my cousin Sonia McHaren, who is a current resident of Eastwood Housing Community in Ames. She's been living here for the past 10 years, and I wanted to know her personal experience about living in Ames.
Ron, what and where is the Eastwood Housing Community?
Eastwood is a community that's located on 7th Avenue, 7th Street in Ames. It's close to Banshell Park. And Eastwood is one of the many communities in Ames where there's a lot of black people that live there.
But they're not all in one area in Ames or in one particular housing project?
There are a lot of residents in West Ames, too, but they're all not in one area in any particular housing development. You would think that there are a lot of black communities in Ames, but actually there are a lot of people living in the east part of town don't really have any relationship with the blacks in West Ames. So there really are at least two communities of black people and no strong community identity. I asked Sonia about some of these, and this is what she had to say.
Hi, my name is Sonia McCarron. I live in Ames, Iowa in Eastwood Apartments. I've been here in Eastwood for about 4 years now, in Ames, period, about 10 years.
So, Sonia, you say you live in Eastwood. Would you describe Eastwood to the people that don't really know about Eastwood?
A quiet community. It's not as bad as people say. I think it is, but they you know, separate Eastwood from the rest of Ames because they think it's drugs and all type of stuff over here, but it's not like that. It's actually quiet over here. And it's a good place for your kids.
What's your impression of the Ames community as far as what's going on around here? What's there to do here?
There's actually nothing to do here.
What do you mean by nothing?
They don't have any activities for the teenagers. They have nowhere to go, nothing to do. That's why most of them are in trouble all the time, because it's nothing for them. They have to go to different cities to, like, for skating, anything like that. It's not nothing in Ames like that.
So saying that there's nothing in Ames, what do you think that the community needs to do to make that situation a lot better?
They need to come together, first of all, and not separate one end of the city from the other end.
And what do you mean by separate?
Well, you know, it's west side and then it's east side.
So in separating, are you saying that there are two separate black communities in Ames?
Yeah.
And as far as these black communities, I mean, what's the difference between the black communities you see in Ames?
I'm over here. I don't go over there. Really nothing over there either. So it's nothing like we can go visit and we can see, you know, how the place, you know, how they are over there, because there's something over there to do.
You mean on the west side of Ames?
So if it was like a library over there, you go to a library. You say, oh, well, it's quiet over here, and they do this and that over here, but you can't do that because it's nothing over there, like there's nothing over here.
So you mean there's basically nothing in Ames for blacks to do here, or no get-togethers, no cultural events, no nothing?
No nothing.
So what do you think that the city needs to do to change that situation?
They need to develop different types of programs, not for just the blacks, but for all the teenagers, so they can be together and know that we basically all the same, just different colors.
And do you find that to be a real big problem here in Ames?
Yeah, because I have ran into a lot of prejudice.
And in what way?
Even as far as me walking on the same side of the street as some of the white people, they will cross over.
I know it's offensive, but could it be changed?
It could be changed if they just got to know who the black, what you know, black people are. All black people are not bad people. That's what they have to understand.
Okay.
Just because this person from Chicago is this way don't mean everybody's like that.
So in other words, you're saying that they should get to know the blacks that are here now.
Yeah.
What's your impression of when they say that they see that a lot of blacks here are just walking the streets?
Yeah, because they can't find jobs. The white people get the jobs.
So, I mean, as far as like the major stores or Walmart or downtown area?
Yeah, they won't hire the black kids before they hire the white ones.
And do you have like a feeling about why that is?
Well, like I said, we have some bad seeds, and they have made it bad for the rest of them. But they shouldn't go by that, because not everybody is bad. That's just like us looking at them and say, oh, well, he did that, so all white people are bad. But that's not how it's supposed to be.
So, in other words, what do you think would make Ames a better community for not just the blacks here in Ames, but whites and everybody here?
For them to have just make different programs where everybody can be involved, not just one race, or not make it about how much money you have, or, you know, what side of Ames you come from, or who your parents are. Just, you know, have programs for the kids and older ones to, you know, get to know each other, and it'll be a much better place.
So right now there are no programs in Ames to help the kids. Is it just the kids, or is it everybody?
None for me either, actually. It's really nothing for the older black people to do either. You know, they have their little different things at the city hall, their little dancing, but it's not our type of dance.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's, you know.
So you're saying that Ames needs to be more cultural diverse in what they offer, in the programs that they offer here. Okay. I know a lot about the system in Ames, about getting help and people that, you know, come here from different places. How has that been influential in your life and dealing with Ames as far as the programs that are provided here for people?
Yeah, the programs are very good. And they will help you. They help you more than I've seen any other place.
What are some of the places
like
that people can go to?
Like the resident service, the ERP, MICA, But there's quite a few places.
So in other words, the community just needs to change some of the cultural things. But as far as helping people, they're very good about that.
Yeah.
About giving people assistance.
Yeah, and the schools are good, too. They do a lot for the kids. They teach the kids a lot.
So do you have any kids here in Ames?
Yes.
And does he go to school here?
Meeker.
So what's your impression of Meeker?
Now, he's learned a lot there. More than I think he would have learned if we were still in Chicago.
What are some of your final thoughts about Ames, and where would you like to see Ames go?
I would like to see them do more for the teenager going into their adulthood, more positive things for them so that they won't see all the young black people walking around with nothing to do. Make jobs available for them. Resume, how to go for job interviews, how to do this and that. You know, offer that service. Have different programs for them instead of talking about them.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Radio, and today, this last day of Black History Month, we are looking at the lives and stories of some of our own Story County black residents, and a look at the community from a point of view of less commonly discussed. We have heard from my cousin, Sonya McHaren, and we have some guests here in the studio who would also like to share their stories. Welcome, Merle, and we also have Alan Stewart.
How you doing?
Hey.
Alan, Sonya talked about the teen perspective in Ames. Could you give us your point of view on that?
Growing up in a college town, like, there's good and there's bad. But for me personally, like, I've experienced, like, good things here. So I don't really surround myself with, like, negative people to, like, do negative things. So it's been great.
How old are you?
I'm 20.
And did you grow up here in Ames?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I was born in Chicago. Like, when people ask me, hey, where are you from? I say I'm from Ames because this is where I, like, pretty much grew up at.
You graduated from Ames High School?
Yes.
When did you graduate?
Just last year.
What are you doing now after graduation?
Going to DMAC right now and hopefully get a degree in coaching.
You were an athlete in high school, is
yeah,
that correct?
Yeah.
A football player?
Yeah.
What are you planning to do with the degree?
After 2 years at DMAC, hopefully to transfer to ISU.
And you know what you want to study at Iowa State?
Journalism.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Stick around here.
No, we got another on-air personality.
Did you experience feeling bored in Ames?
Not really, because, like I said before, it's a college town, and there's, like, around football season, basketball season, there's a lot to do. Ames has expanded since I've been here. Like, a lot of stores have been open.
Yeah. So what do you do for fun?
Work out, hang out with my friends, and go to ISU football games and stuff.
When you think of your family and your home, you think of Ames. This
yeah.
is really what you know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And your relatives are still in Chicago?
Yeah, I visit there from time to time.
You say it's a great community. What do you think that can make it a little bit better?
Well, for me, growing up, to stay out of trouble, I actually went to the Boys and Girls Club, and that's always been good. Like, a lot of kids used to go there all the time. Just being active in sports always helps.
Okay, yeah, that's a good thing, you know, to know that there are places for the youth in Ames, black youth in Ames, to go to and then, you know, and have a good time in Ames and really become part of the community.
Right.
Where do you go for entertainment?
For entertainment, I usually go to the movies or ISU football games and basketball games.
Mm-hmm. When you were growing up in Ames, would you say that were there a group of young black kids that stuck together, or was it really not something that played a role in your high school experience?
For me growing up, going to Boys and Girls Club, it was very diverse, so it was easy to make friends, like white and black. Me, I'm good at making friends or whatever.
So for you, there really was no disconnect between the two. It was all mixed together.
Some of my closest friends are black, but next to them, like, some of my other close friends are white.
You're a product of Ames.
Yeah.
So you plan on staying here for a while since you grew up here?
Yeah, pretty much, to go to school and stuff. So, yeah.
Any observations you have about what it's been like growing up here?
Well, if you go to a school like Ames High, like, where the teachers are more than just teachers, like, they get to know you and stuff, and Ames High have a high graduation rate, is because, like, everything is active, like, in the school, and they reach out and help the kids and stuff. I loved high school, but my teachers, like, reached out to help me, like, whenever I was struggling or whatever, but it's just a great community. for me as a kid growing up here and getting to know like some of my friends' parents, and the word goes around about me like being a good kid, and that's, I never really had like any prejudice towards me.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, that's really great.
So Merle, you're with us too here. Hi, yeah. Merle.
How you doing?
Merle, you actually have a show on KHOI.
Yes, it's called Merle on the Move every Saturday night, 9 to 11. Check it out.
Tell us a little bit about the show.
It's sports, hip-hop, and social and political show. I do talk and sports.
So you're from St. Louis, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Different part of the...
From the Lou. Find me in St. Louis.
So we've heard everybody else's story. Why don't you tell us about yours?
My transition here to Ames, I've moved here in 2009. Never heard of Ames, Iowa. I heard of Iowa State. Me and my wife wanted to move up to leave St. Louis area to Iowa. I used to drive over the road, drive trucks. I teach truck driving now.
Why did you pick Iowa?
I lived in Cedar Rapids back in 97 because I worked for a company there, and I liked it. It was kind of wholesome, you know, different to where I'm from. And we kind of wanted to move to a more of a bigger area, Des Moines area, but I didn't want to live in Des Moines, so we picked Ames.
And mentioning that, just let everybody know, me and Merle used to be neighbors.
Yeah, I mean, we're next door neighbors.
Right next door, right across on Carroll Street, across the same house.
I've been in the same house since I've moved here.
What street was this?
On Carroll, right on the east side.
Okay.
East side of the
Ames. Right by the housing development we're staying. I live on Carroll, though, right by the park.
So, Merle, what are some of your impressions of Ames as far as being a black resident in Ames? Like, what would you say?
I think it's like Disney World. I think I've said that several times.
Explain.
I love it. What I mean by that is where I'm from, one of the first things I noticed when I moved here was it was a shooting on the news that happened in Des Moines, and it happened like 6 months ago. And they were talking about it like it just happened last night.
Wow.
And back home where I'm from, it's a murder in the morning, and the evening news is a murder. You know what I mean? So it's one of the first things I noticed, you know. And that was in Des Moines, and we live in Ames, so
yeah. So it made me feel even better.
You know what I mean? I love the community here. It's a lot of opportunity here. As far as racism, it's racism everywhere. I haven't experienced it on the level that I have in other places. I've noticed that I was told this when I first moved here, that if you have ambition and you want to do something, it's people here that will help you do it. And I'm a testament of that because I'm sitting here right now because I met some people at Banshell Park back in 2011 that had an idea for a radio station.
And here we are right now. Was born.
So there you go. You know, you say as far as the community here, you know, look what we're doing right now.
And you have children here, too, right?
Yes, I have two daughters and a son. Both my daughters went to Aim High also. Mm-hmm. My youngest daughter, she'll graduate this year. And my oldest daughter, she graduated 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So Sonia was saying that she didn't feel that there was enough for teenagers to do. What do you think she was referring to?
I agree, unless it is sports. This is a sports town because of the university here. So I'm hoping my son catches fire on the sports and keep him out of some trouble. Also, like this young man next to me and the great testimony that he gave on the air today. I'm glad to see that it is some young African-American men that's doing some things. So congratulations on graduating and going to college, my man. But, yeah, it's besides the water park that they have here in town in the summertime, it's not much for them to do unless you're into sports. They got the Dollar Theater in the mall, which is good. But they don't really have a place for kids just to, like, they got the Boys and Girls Club, but it's a certain age limit over there. But it's the tweeners. It's the guys, it's the kids that's, like, in between 16 and 20. You know what I mean? They're too young to do the adult things, but too old to do the kiddie things. Those, I think they need to cater to those kids a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say that, as an older adult in Ames, like, what's your perspective of Ames? Like, what is there to do here for older adults in Ames?
Main Street, I guess. I don't know. It's not, let's say, sports. Like my man said here, Alan said, it's if you're not into sports or if you're not a fan, I mean, you got a lot of adults that are fan of sports here, of the college thing here. So besides that, it's not a lot to do here, you know. And I believe it's a lot of the money in this town that could create more avenues besides bars. I think we got enough bars. I think it's a bar opening up here. On it used to be the little video store next to Burger King.
Yeah, I saw that the other
It turned
day.
Into another yeah. bar. I don't think we need another bar.
What you do know? We need?
I think a community center would be better. You know what I mean? Something that you can have more involvement in. Like, everybody's anticipating the library to open back up. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because that library was a great place that everybody would come and connect. Mm-hmm. You know, young and old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about that.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Gina McAndrewsman, and myself, Susan Franzen. Our guests were David Gradwell, Al Womble, and from our archives in 2014, Ursula Rudenberg and Ron Lassen, interviewing various members of Ames Black Community. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m.
At noon, you can hear a rebroadcast of Capital Week, originally aired Monday evening at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. And remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.